Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Hope everyone's doing well, safe, sound, employed, all that good stuff. This week, Jason Powell of ProWrestling.net makes his debut on the show, and I was really interested in talking with him because I mentioned on last week's show, if you heard it, he had a great question to Triple H on a recent NXT conference call about the lack of COVID testing in NXT, or whether or not there was COVID testing. So we talked a little bit about that. We talked about how he's doing in Minneapolis, or he lives outside, just outside St. Paul, rather. And kind of just just every single day, things happening there. It's a crazy time, obviously, after the George Floyd killing, and just the whole situation there. So we talk a little bit about that, how he's doing, and we get into a talk I promised last week about essentially not necessarily focusing on just conservatives, but we had that question a few weeks ago about whether it could be some blowback for people like The Undertaker, Mark Calloway, for wearing a Blue Lives Matter shirt, the Nine Line apparel and those type of things. And then also Jackson Riker's recent tweet. And it's been something that's on my mind of whether, conservatives can actually kind of be who they are, and kind of how that could affect a locker room. There's the angle of Sinclair, because Sinclair is known as a conservative broadcasting company. They own Ring of Honor. So there's some questions there. What if wrestlers have an issue with that? So I think this is going to be a kind of an interesting story to follow. So I want to kind of ask what Jason's thoughts were on that. So we talk about that a little bit. So we do kind of, delve into that political realm, but I'll tell you, as someone that isn't a big fan of politics or just a lot of these things going on for the extreme sides, this is a more of a kind of down the middle conversation, I guess, and just kind of talking about things. So if you're immediately like, oh my God, I can't listen to another, political soliloquy or whatever you want to call it, monologue, you won't get that here. We just kind of keep those things open. So if you have an open mind, I think you'll enjoy it. We also talk about this weekend's greatest match ever, whether or not that tagline is fair for Edge and Randy Orton, MLW's deal with DAZN, and the cinematic era and what Jason's thoughts are on that, as it seems to be here to stay in some form or fashion, whether that's good or bad, and all that good stuff, as well as a couple ideas we had for potential cinematic matches featuring the aforementioned Undertaker. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. I had a lot of fun with it, and let's get to it right now. Yours truly, Jason Powell. Let's do it. If you've been reading about pro wrestling on the internet for any period of time, say over the last decade, 15 years, whatever it's been, you definitely know the name of our guest this week. He used to write for and be an assistant editor for Pro Wrestling Torch from 1998 to 2003. And since February 2008, he has been the head, primary writer and editor, broadcaster for ProWrestling.net. And I'm very glad to welcome for the very first time in a bit of a crossover from another wrestling website, the one and only Jason Powell. And Jason, I will start out by asking you the question that all podcasters usually ask. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful now that we're on the air. Everything's rosy. Everything's great.
That's right. so I know you had talked a little bit about this on your one of your podcasts, but you were just outside St. Paul, and obviously it's been a crazy time for those people in the Twin Cities and Minneapolis and in Minnesota in general, really, the country and the world and everything like that. We're talking about, trying to avoid the news for a day and things like that. How are things on the ground there with you and with the whole situation? How are you dealing with everything day to day?
Yeah, so I'm probably, 15, 20 minutes from St. Paul, about 25 minutes from Minneapolis. And so, as I've been telling people that have checked in, in my neighborhood, they're more likely to protest if one of the 17 pizza places close that we seem to have in town. We have nothing but pizza places and a Subway for some reason. Obviously watching the news and just taking it all in and having friends in the area and everything, it's been something, no doubt about that. I have not taken part in any of the protests. I certainly wanted to, had a discussion with my girlfriend about doing that. And we I really haven't talked about this, but we share our home. It's kind of a split entry. And so our actual landlord lives in the lower level, and she's a wonderful lady in her late 60s, and she's been battling breast cancer. And with COVID, it's like, we just can't take that risk. And so we've just been kind of watching everything from afar. And I mean, long overdue in so many ways. The Minneapolis Police Force has just had a reputation over the years, and not just with black folks. I mean, I've had a run-in, and it's just one cop. It was something silly at a Viking game, and it was just ridiculous, just the temperament of this guy. Mm. And, you know, that doesn't mean they're all bad or anything like that. But, yeah, it's just seeing, you know, Minnesota nice and all this, and everybody just has this perception of Minnesota, and knowing that Minneapolis has been such a tough spot, it's again, long overdue to see this in so many ways. And I don't condone the looting by any means, but the protests I'm all for.
Right. And that comes, brings a question of mine that something that our site has run into, because, you know, Dave is obviously pretty passionate about a lot of the social issues going on. He's talked a lot about it since really, you know, talks going back to when, you know, the COVID outbreak started. And, you know, I think a lot of people just, how do wrestling, and we obviously cover, you know, UFC as well and MMA, you know, how are these promoters handling this? You know, should there be shows coming back? Are they doing the testing and all this as well? And then, of course, you have, you know, with any media outlet, you have people that push back because they're looking for a release. They're looking for to not hear about that. Maybe they don't agree. Maybe they do agree. Have you, you know, how have you kind of managed that with the ProWrestling.net website? Are you just, I mean, at this point, you know, subscribers obviously know and people know who you are. And part of one of the reasons they subscribe is for those, that personality and that person. But have you thought about, you know, should I talk about this social issue, this social, how do you, you know, is it, do I say nothing? Do I say any, you know, like how have you kind of balanced it out in your own head?
So I've kind of entered no F's given mode, and I've warned listeners on, you know, my various podcasts, like, hey, so if I'm reviewing a Raw show or AEW Dynamite, for instance, I'm just going to stick to it. If it's, I do a weekly Q&A audio show, and I knew, you know, people were going to be asking about that. And also the .NET weekly audio show with Jake Barnett. My approach has just been to warn people up front. Look, I'm, you know, it's with everything going on in the world, I know some of you are looking for just a distraction. I get it. If you don't want to hear any political talk, or if you just don't, if you can't handle a political opinion that may not be shared, you know, that you may not share, this isn't the audio for you. And so far, the reaction has been tremendous. It's been, you know, I think it's people who are like-minded, but I'm not hearing from people going, stick to wrestling and shut the F up. You know, I haven't had that experience yet. I'm sure some of them are out there. But, you know, I'm not, when it comes to my political views, I'm very much in the middle. You know, and I lean left, well, over the last probably 8 years, I've ended up leaning left just because of a lot of social issues, more than anything. But I, you know, it's so one week I may end up venting about the president, but the next week, as happened, I couldn't help it in my Q&A audio show just to talk about the absurdity of disbanding the police department, and not in general. Like I'm totally willing to listen to the plan, but the initial statements I was hearing from the city council members. Like, who do you call? Do you, instead of calling the cops, who do you call? Mm-hmm. And they're saying things like, well, you call a family member. Okay, my nearest family member is about 30 minutes away. Mm-hmm. Or you call a neighbor. I barely know my neighbors. I mean, it's like you have to have a real plan in order to do this. And so some of it was tongue in cheek. But how can you not mock the absurdity of just, we're going to disband the police, but we don't have a plan?
Right, right. No, I agree. And I think that's what a lot of us, I'm in New England, New Hampshire. And, you know, we're, you know, it's to kind of look at this from the outside, it is, you know, the knee jerk reaction to say, absolutely, you know, how do you do that? But then to hear not have a plan, that's one thing I imagine for people living there. It's kind of this prospect of, what, you know, how does this work? And so I think, yeah, and I think it's the, a lot of this is trying to figure out there's clearly an issues. And how do we best figure that out? And of course, the way that everything's so politically divisive these days, you know, even a virus became politically divisive, right? It's just trying to get people like in our parents' era, I'm 42, you know, back in those eras, they would try to figure out, okay, how do we best come together and figure out what's best for the country? And right, we just haven't had that in so long. And I think that's a frustration with a lot of people like us who are kind of in, like you mentioned, in the middle, that we just want the best lives for ourselves and our families and everyone to be safe. And, you know, if this person wants to get married and this, as long as people are being safe, who cares, right? Everyone wants to live their own life, but it's these extremes off to the left and right that just, you know, they kind of ruin it for everyone else. And unfortunately, that's kind of the era that we're living in now.
It feels like the squeaky wheel gets the grease. You know, they make the most noise. And so we're like on a pendulum. It's just for 8 years, you might get it one way and then it's going to swing back in the other direction. It's like, can we just meet in the middle and be done with this? To me, it's just the team sports that politics have become is just sad. Like I said, I mean, I lean left and everything else, but it doesn't mean that I agree with every extreme left point of view. It doesn't mean that if there's a Democrat that says or does something stupid that I'm going to defend it. And I just see too much of that from both sides. Hmm.
Well, that's a good segue. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was this. So we get this email in a couple weeks ago, and it was asking, you know, questions and just like you do. It was kind of questioning whether or asking whether Dave and Brian were going to talk about the Undertaker wearing Blue Lives Matter shirts when he was doing interviews and like in the documentary and, you know, when they're wearing the Don't Tread on Me t-shirts and just, you know, more traditional, quote unquote, conservative wear, so to speak, whatever that really means. Just kind of wondering if they were going to talk about it. And I kind of was thinking about, I'm like, well, you know, the documentary was filmed so long ago that this before any of this happened. And
right.
And then the Jackson Riker tweet happened. Which was, you know, there's the people obviously have freedom of speech. And I think everyone agrees with that, even though I think people there, how they view that depends on what side you lean on. And so we're talking about the extremes, but you know, maybe the timing certainly was not good. And I've been thinking about this a lot over the past, couple weeks or so since we get the email and since the tweet and since everything that's happening is I wonder if it's possible. And it's crazy because, you know, Vince McMahon has aligned himself with Donald Trump in the past and so on. And is it possible for wrestlers, if they want to talk openly about these type of things, is it possible for them for conservatives to actually admit that they are conservatives in this era? Do things like Jackson Riker said, does that affect him essentially for the rest of his career? Does he almost have like a scarlet letter on him because he brought this up and he has people that he physically has to work with? Does it cause, the issues in the ring? Not that anyone would take whatever the term is, basically liberties with him. But, you know, does it cause issues in the locker room? He's in a tag team. Does that get, like, I keep thinking about this and like how a company, WWE, AEW, MLW, whoever it is, how they're supposed to manage this. You have ROH owned by a typical, you know, a more conservative company. And so I'm just thinking this new world that we're rapidly in finding ourselves in, like, how does this play out? What can you say? What can't you say? And my mind's kind of been wrapped around. So I want to talk to someone else with a mind like yours about what you think about that.
For me, the Riker issue, it wasn't so much what he tweeted as much as it was when he tweeted. I'm sitting there watching the president of the United States have the police force use pepper spray, and yes, they can split hairs and claim it wasn't, but the CDC says it was, or tear gas, I apologize. They're using tear gas on peaceful protesters to move them out of the way so that he can go get a photo op. And minutes later, that's when the Riker tweet appeared. So that was the big issue for me. Like, had it occurred a week earlier, you know, I might look at it and go, not for me. And kind of like the Undertaker thing. I don't care who Undertaker votes for. I'm not going to convince him otherwise. Is it a turnoff to me? On some level, but we all have different life experiences. And so for me, as someone who leans a certain way, if somebody else leans that the other way for, like my own father, he is a Republican, but for him, it's about fiscal matters. He's very much fiscally conservative. I don't have an issue with that. But again, with Riker, it's the timing of it where I'm just shaking my head going, are you kidding me? Are we seeing the same thing? You're endorsing this. And, you know, he has the right to his opinion. And as we know with freedom of speech, it doesn't give you the freedom of no consequences for what you say.
Right.
And I'm not saying that the guy should be fired or anything like that. It's tough, you know, and it's not just wrestling. I think everyone's going to have to, you know, if you're an employer, you're bound to have some people with different political viewpoints. And so I don't think like Riker should be fired or anything like that. But I got to admit, I was pretty happy to see some of his coworkers push back and go after him a little bit, mm-hmm. again, just because of the timing of it.
Yeah. And with the, you know, with the Undertaker thing, what I thought was kind of fascinating in trying to think about this is he's, you know, this documentary and just his, he has basically just opened up the kimono, so to speak, with just his career, which is, it's insane to me. You watch that first episode of Last Ride blew me away because I had never, you know, he's never talked like this. And just basically like someone that has had such a secrecy veil over his character and his private life and all this, for the most part, there's little hints, you know, see him at the airport and, you know, the Michelle McCool marriage and all those things. You got these little kind of hints or openings into his career. But now he's just kind of like, this is what I'm thinking and this is what I'm have to do to get in the ring. And this is me hobble around. There's no filter on this. So it's kind of endeared himself to this or even re-endeared himself to this new generation of fans and existing generation. But now it's like, does he have to, I don't think he'll do this, but does he have to think how he positions himself and what things he wears and all these? I don't think he will, but there's just all these things that we really didn't have to think about so much. And it seems like maybe now, because we're in this hyper-focused political era, that everything seems to matter when it comes to positioning and branding yourself and all this. So I wonder, you know, does this further kind of make some people kind of hide a little bit more with who they are because they're just afraid to have, you know, the ramifications?
It's a tricky one. I mean, if you are a WWE talent, you're working for a company that, as we know, Linda McMahon is in charge of Donald Trump, the fundraising for his reelection. So, you know, left-leaning folk are going to take issue with that. But you also have the Khan family donating last time to, I shouldn't even say the Khan family, it was Shad Khan. Because that's come up like, why don't you go after Tony Khan for his political beliefs? And it's like, because quite frankly, it's the same reason as Paul Levesque. I don't know what his political beliefs are. Just because his father did that. I mean, I just said, you know, my dad leans one way, I lean the other way. And so for all I know, you know, the same thing is happening in the Khan family. And I suspect that Levesque goes a certain way. But it to me, that part doesn't, I mean, okay, do you not support any of them? Because Ring of Honor, of course, owned by Sinclair Broadcast Group. And I don't know if there's a good answer there as far as what, every fan has to decide for themselves. I had somebody on Twitter just the other day say they think they're done supporting WWE. I think they'd listen to the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. I did a two-parter with Bruce Mitchell, and it was another example of, you know, no F's given. We're just going to speak openly. And they came away with that conclusion. And that's not the message I'm trying to send to anybody. There's really no message to what I'm saying. It's just more getting things off my chest, you know, sharing my thoughts. And it doesn't mean they're right. I didn't even respond to the person because it's like, it's not my place to tell you. If you come to that conclusion on your own, that is your choice. I can't blame you, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you, yeah, give up on WWE forever because of their, you know, the McMahon family's political beliefs. That's not my place. And so I guess it's just kind of up to every individual to decide for themselves.
Agreed. You mentioned Paul Levesque, and I have to applaud you. Thank you for asking the best question. One of the best questions I've heard on these NXT conference calls since I've been recording them for our website, you know, for the past couple of years. It was a succinct question. It was not a gotcha question. It was an honest question. And I got to thank you for asking it as someone with a journalism degree and strives to, try to stick to some sort of journalistic, integrity when it comes to things we do and things are right. You asked Triple H on the call simply, and we played on my last week's show. You asked him if WWE was doing COVID testing and if not, why? It was a simple question. And I was curious kind of where, was that just something that you really wanted to know about or just kind of just your thought process going into it, because I thought it was great, and I wanted to and then follow up with a question about his response.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly wasn't a gotcha. We don't have access to Vince McMahon, obviously, and so there's going to be some questions that Levesque gets that really should be directed at Vince and other executives in the company, but, you know, he's the closest we get, and so we know he knows the answer. And for that one, there'd certainly been rumors that all they were doing was temp checks. And so I wanted to verify that. I mean, I just kind of shake my head. His explanation was that they don't trust the testing. I don't know why. I still didn't come away, you know, clear. He claimed that basically once they trust the testing, they'll do it. And okay, he's claiming it works, and it's like, well, hopefully it is. You know, we don't know. They had one issue with one person testing positive for COVID already, and so I guess he's touting success there. And to me, it's like, okay, but you haven't been doing any real testing, so is it working, or are you really lucky? And you know, and I still have questions about. I don't know exactly what type of testing AEW is doing. I know they're doing more than WWE. And, you know, WWE certainly has the money. It's because if anybody's like, well, you know, if they're testing for Impact Wrestling, it's like, I don't. But I mean, realistically, from a financial standpoint, we know WWE can afford this. And it's just strange to me that they haven't taken that step.
Yeah, I was fascinated by his answer because you could tell he didn't say yes or no, which is the, you know, that's a red flag right there. But I listened to that answer probably three or four times just to kind of get his tone and make sure I wasn't trying to hear something that I wasn't hearing. But he was a little caught off guard because he was trying to give a very politically correct answer, for lack of a better phrase, because he knew if he just said no, we're not, then he was going to get skewered. And you know, I listened to what he said, and he just was, you know, that that's one of those questions, obviously, and they don't allow the follow-up questions for whatever reason. But that obviously would have been the follow-up. So why? And you
mentioned, because international media had to ask if NXT is coming to their market.
Oh, my God. We're going to get to that in a minute. Oh, boy. But these, you know, they don't trust the current test. They want to get tests, and they've heard, like, some of the tests that are out there are not valid, and they just kind of was like, you know, when those tests come in, they're completely accurate, we'll be right on that. So it's like, that, to me, that was the biggest story that no one really covered, the fact that they are not doing COVID testing. That was the whole thing with this, you know, this feeling better about them running shows. And this is why, you know, UFC has this protocol, and that's been skewered all out there. You mentioned AEW. That they really have not listed out, here's every single thing that we're doing. And we also have to trust that if someone pops and tests positive, that they are legit being, they're off. And what right do people have to know? Have other people tested positive that we don't know about, and they're just trying to keep it quiet? I would think that it would get out somehow, just because of the way that people talk and they're human beings. But there's so many layers to this, and I'm so glad you asked that question. There's so many other follow-ups that need to be asked and answered. I mean, who knows if we ever really get the answers to them.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the closest we've had was way back probably March, when Stephanie, was at Variety that she spoke with? And, you know, at that time, testing was so minimal as far as the availability. I think timeline wise, I think there was some testing being done, but it was very minimal.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't a big concern at that point that they weren't. I mean, it was a concern, but it wasn't so much you could be doing this, why aren't you? It was you kind of assumed that if they could, they would. But then, of course, she felt the need to take the thinly veiled jab at AEW for having fans at ringside, or, you know, spectator wrestlers at ringside and that sort of thing. And I think that became more of the story. But yeah, it is crazy to me that, you know, a few months later, they're still just checking temps at the door. And hey, they've talked about the cleaning solution they use. So it's not just that.
Yeah.
But hey, when governors and just elected officials are telling you, go get COVID testing, you know, take the test. It's crazy to me that a corporation says, yeah, we don't trust it.
Right. Oh, boy. So speaking about empty arena matches in WWE, we learned the other day that Edge versus Randy Orton is already in the can. The greatest match ever. It's going to happen on Sunday. I can't believe it's like knowing what you're going to get for Christmas, right? We know it's going to be a 20-star match. I'm going to break Dave's scale, break everyone's scale. The build of this, I just wonder from a promotion standpoint, they can do all the editing in the world, but they are just really setting these guys up to be skewered on social. And you know, people are just lining up to say, not the best match ever, not the greatest match ever, and just rip these guys. To me, it's just, and I know Edge did an interview the other day where he's kind of considers it just, you know, hyperbolic, and this is just, you know, Vince McMahon being a promoter. I feel bad for these guys that there's no, I mean, we just know there's no way they're going to live up to this. And they, it just, you know, that between the WrestleMania match that was, you know, pretty widely panned for being too long, it just did not hit the mark for what a lot of people were hoping back, especially in Edge's return to this. I just feel bad for these guys that they're going to have to try to live up to this tagline that is just seems virtually impossible to reach.
I just shake my head. I think I'm curious to know what you think on this, Josh. With WWE, I think my take on it is they're so driven to get any reaction on social media, they don't care if it's a negative reaction. They just want people to be talking about them. And I kind of shake my head at that notion, like, no, don't you want people to be talking favorably about you? But I think that's what this is just get people talking about this show that people probably wouldn't have been talking much. I'm not justifying it by any means. I think it's crazy. I think it is foolish. And I'll tell you my favorite conspiracy theory that I've heard from somebody that's worked for WWE in the past is that this is Vince's way of getting a little revenge on Edge and Randy Orton because both guys used AEW as leverage in negotiations. I don't know if there's anything to it, but I certainly love it.
Well, I love conspiracy theories like that. That's great.
Yeah.
I think it's, I think they're looking for just any type of angle that they can get to draw interest. I think they've seen that, you know, the ratings have been down for both Raw and SmackDown, and that the general interest levels is down. They obviously have access to more metrics than we do. That, like, look, if we have any type of hook, you know, a regular wrestling match between these two guys is probably not going to generate buzz. But if we tag this as a must-see event, at least we can play to our hardcore fan base that thinks everything we do is great, and maybe this will, you know, their voices on social will help drown out everyone else. I don't know why you would. I used to work in pro sports. I can't in the marketing side. And when you do, you know, taglines and when you do promotion and things like that, you want to try to, I can't even think of the saying, but essentially, over deliver, under average. I can't remember. I'm completely screwing it up. But
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. You basically don't overhype something that you can't, that you know you can't deliver on. When you're doing things,
right,
you can't, there's no guarantee you're going to be able to, they can do all the editing in the world. They're not going to be able to do what I think they're going to do. Dave heard it was a good match, a really good match. But I mean, it's not going to be, you know, the Okada Omega classics or anything like that. It's just not. And you're just, to me, you just set yourself up for that group of the fans that are like, they're expecting something great. And some will trick themselves, the ones that will, they're pro WWE for life. They will talk themselves into saying it was the greatest match they've ever seen. But I just, it's just, why would you even do this to yourself? But they're doing it, and we'll see Sunday how it plays out. I think it is captivating in that I want to see how this plays out, but I think the reaction afterward, you can almost like feel what it's going to be no matter what.
It's like going into a Super Bowl and let's say Fox has it and they're telling people it's going to be the greatest Super Bowl ever, even if it looks great on paper. I mean, we know that it could be. Realistically, it's probably not going to be. You just don't do that. Yeah, you're just setting the bar way too high. It isn't fair to Adam Copeland or Randy Orton. I feel for those guys going into this. I mean, those fans, you mentioned some fans will convince themselves it is. Do we even pay attention to them? I mean, it's just any company that is just so rah-rah. I don't get the team sport mentality in politics, and I sure as hell don't get it in wrestling. The idea that, I cheer for AEW over NXT, or I cheer for NXT over AEW. Like, why? Just sit back and enjoy the damn shows.
Oh, my God. I you're preaching the choir. I don't, and I see this in just Twitter mentions for our site, is, you know, anything – just numbers, like obviously rating numbers. They are what they are. It is, you know, obviously there's variances and so on, but you know, here's what this group did and here's what this group did. And you can write that in a headline and just say, here's this number, here's this number. And all here's typical, everyone's so pro AEW, so pro this. And then again, just it is the weirdest thing because I don't know. I came up in a time when, you know, obviously it was in the 80s, you know, it was WWF, and obviously, you know, NWA, WCW. And when I saw other groups, I could not wait to watch them because where I lived, we just didn't have a lot of access to stuff. I didn't have cable till I was like in my teens. and I'd go to friends' houses and they would watch something, and all of a sudden, you know, Clash of the Champions was on or something like that. I'm like, what is this? And I wasn't like, you know, crossing my arms saying, I'm a Hulk Hogan guy. I'm not going to watch this. I'm a WWF guy. I'm not going to watch this. I couldn't get enough. And then when, you know, we got a satellite dish, I'd watch ECW and Smoky Mountain Wrestling and USWA and any single thing that I could. And to me, I wasn't thinking, okay, why these other ones exist? I was just like, give me more, give me more. And this era now where we have so much stuff potentially to watch that we'll never get to watch, and so much stuff from the past we'll never get to watch. It is crazy that we have a two companies competing to put on a really good product every single Wednesday night. And there are still people like, I'm not going to watch the other one, or, you know, you're a mark for this and blah, blah, blah. It's like, guys, just enjoy what we're doing. DVR one, watch the other live, switch back and forth. Like, this is supposed to be fun, but I think it's just the way that social is. Everyone has to take a side on something. To me, it's like, just have fun with it. This is good stuff. You can pick and choose what you want. You don't have to watch any live wrestling for the rest of your life. You go completely back in the archives, and you'll have more than you'll ever be able to watch, or just watch Japan, or just watch this. And it's crazy, man. It is absolutely crazy. So you hit that nail right in the head.
Well, I grew up obviously in the Twin Cities area. And so when I started watching, I'll be 48 in August. And so it was right around 1980 is when I started. And the AWA was the only show in town. And as a young fan, I didn't even know about all these other groups, but we eventually got World Class on UHF. It's a TV thing, kids. But we would get that show, and I was blown away. And then when, you know, I think we started getting a little bit, I think it was just World Class. And like you, we lived out in the middle of nowhere, so we didn't have cable. And so I didn't even, you know, I'd read the After magazines to hear about some of these other promotions. But when the WWF kind of started rating the AWA, like the Ghanias obviously wanted to position this as, hey, we're the hometown team. And in so many ways they were, just because of being, you know, being headquartered in the Twin Cities. I didn't care. It was like, just continue to entertain me. And they have Hulk Hogan, and they have Jesse Ventura, and me and Gene Okerlund. And we're fine. You know, now we get WWF in syndication. I'm watching this. I never developed any sort of home team mentality, even then, when the AWA was basically in my home market. You know, they were centered, based here. I'll never get that whole mentality. I mean, people can watch however they want to, but I just don't understand it.
The joy of using tinfoil with rabbit ears, trying to get a UHF station back. I feel your pain. I know exactly what it is. And everything would come in, and then you'd have to, like, we also had an antenna on the roof, and you'd have to try to aim it just right. And maybe that's it. Maybe because we had to do so much hard work back then to try to find more than 1 hour a week of wrestling, you know, and all these, you know, spoiled people now have all this stuff at the touch of a button. You know, maybe they have to go back in time and see what we had to go through. And maybe that will, you know, change their minds a little bit.
I wish we could invent a time machine just to send some fans back, just to see what it was like. And I think the one thing that might amaze them too is that we did all this to see wrestling shows that mostly consisted of a bunch of squash matches.
Yeah.
You know, in the AWA, you might get the occasional television main event, and it wasn't anything that it was nothing special, but it was the promos. So, I mean, some of the in-ring stuff was great. Seeing the Road Warriors just destroy people was always fun, as one example. But I mean, so much of it was squash matches, but those promos leading to the show coming to your town, that's what I enjoyed so much about watching those early days of AWA and WWF, and even World Class. Like, they weren't coming to town, but they would actually give you, they were kind of the exception. They would actually give you good quality matches. You would actually see Freebirds, Von Erichs on the weekly television show.
So along those lines, I want to ask you about cinematic matches. This has been a big trend as of late with bigger WWE shows, and AEW, obviously, with a Stampede recently. I feel like it's the new, to me anyway, because we were just talking about kind of the era that we grew up in. They haven't hooked me that much, really at all, the cinematic style. And I think it's just to me, it's almost like what I thought with intergender matches, in that I'm not a huge fan of them. I've seen like one or two that I've really, really liked, but yeah. I think it's like a dividing line for me that at some point it makes me feel old when I kind of think this way, but it's like, I'm really open-minded when it comes to how wrestling is presented and so on. But there are certain things that just, it takes me out of it. And it almost like takes me too far past the fourth wall, if that's the right term for it. an intergender that does it for me again. I've seen like one or two, and they've all been live. I've never seen a tape intergender match. I've really liked. Open to it. Cool. Indie promotions are doing it. It's working for them. You know, Impact's doing a little bit. Cool. That you got to do different things. That's great. And the wrestlers seem to like doing them. But the cinematic style, it almost takes me too far out of it. I was curious what you thought about the cinematic era that we seem to find ourselves in.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to end, but I don't think it's going to. It's not that I've disliked all of it. I got a kick out of Stadium Stampede, and I like the Undertaker, AJ Styles, what the hell did they call that? The Boneyard match.
Yes.
It wasn't for me, but at the same time, I saw it for what it was. Like, WrestleMania needed a spectacle, and you weren't going to be able to have any kind of spectacle in that empty WWE Performance Center. So that filled that need. But then the next night, watching the Firefly Funhouse match, I just like, what in the hell is this? And some people loved it. To each his own. It's not for me. I think some of it has to do with when we grew up. I know we got a little bit of an age difference, but I think just going back to when wrestling, so the wrestling I enjoyed as a kid, I did definitely enjoy WWF, but I liked the simulated sport. When wrestling leans into that, that's when it's best for me. And so when you start doing mini movies and acid trip flashback or whatever the hell that Cena thing was supposed to be, it just doesn't work for me. But I think I was kinder to the Velveteen Dream and Adam Cole match than a lot of people were, because at least to me, it felt like, okay, it's just a fight with a bunch of cars parked around there. It's a fight. I could have done without the Uber joke, but it was still a simulated sport enough for me anyway. So I'm lenient just because of the times we're living in. I totally understand why you need to kind of think outside the box and do things differently. And I even enjoyed some of the, I'll never forget the first time I saw the Matt Hardy character. I'm like, I would be embarrassed if somebody walked in the room right now and saw that I was watching this. But the character grew on me. And by the time they got to some of those deletion videos, I was like, okay, this is fun. I can turn my brain off and enjoy this. And it may not be my favorite style of wrestling, but at the time, Impact was so desperate for attention, and it was giving it to them. So I can be understanding in certain situations of it. And again, to each his own. I know there's people out there that really dig this stuff and think it's the way of the future and all this. I hope not. I really just, for me as a fan, give me that simulated sport. And that's the issue that I've had watching WWE over the years, and at times AEW and everybody else too. I just make it feel like I'm watching an actual simulated sport. If I see an Undertaker segment and I can rationalize it in my own brain that, okay, he's playing mind games. Fine. As soon as you start doing pyro and on all this, the lightning and all this stuff, that's when you start to lose me. When it gets a little too hokey and unrealistic, it's just not for me.
There is one aspect of it though that I kind of opened my mind to maybe one that I would like to see, and I think it would provide some closure for a lot of fans. And that would be, it got me thinking when, right after Mick Foley was like, I'd love to do the next year's Boneyard match. And and if you're able to, because the way it's shot and cinematically, if you're able to do something where, guys wouldn't have to work a traditional match, if you're able to obviously use the magic of editing and so on. And I was just thinking, like, wouldn't this, if you could figure it out, and I think you could based on the physical nature of this person, I think it'd be a perfect send-off to have a Steve Austin Undertaker Boneyard match if you do a similar style, because obviously Austin has done movies before and so on. He wouldn't have to, you would hope, obviously not have to risk his neck or anything like that. I'm fascinated by that idea, because even though Austin is essentially retired, it's weird even saying, I'm even saying essentially, he's retired. Like he said yeah, before, he's not coming back, but he's never said the words in a WWE ring, I am done. It's like this closure we've never had for those that kind of love the Attitude Era and the Monday Night War and everything, that if you were able to do it right, that would be one I would be really, really interested in, just because it would give us that closure on one part. I don't know if we'll ever get that, but just the intrigue of it and whether it would do that, it's kind of sticking in my head.
See, I haven't thought much about that one. I thought you were going to go with Undertaker Sting. That's the one that people keep bringing up.
Huh.
And for the love of God, I hope they do it so I never have to have someone ask me if we're ever going to get Undertaker and Sting again. I really don't even have a great desire to see it, but I've just been asked that question so many times over the years, like, give the people what they want. But no, that I never thought about Austin in that role. Yeah, you know, if they're going to do it, I think that does make sense. I mean, for Austin, he may just look at it as, you know, leave the legacy alone. Just like, I don't need to do this. But I mean, if he's open to it, I think it would be a way to, I mean, they can get more Taker matches of this style for, you know, however long they want to, basically. It's easy for a guy like him and some others. I know it wouldn't matter, but for me, I just wish it would be, okay, tune into WWE Network to see this as a standalone rather than tune in to see the wrestling pay-per-view and, hey, there's going to be this cinematic too.
Yep. I agree. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. Maybe someday that could happen. But yeah, the Undertaker Sting one, that'd be fascinating as well. Final question. MLW announced a deal with DAZN earlier this week, and we don't really know financial details as of yet. We don't know length of years, but obviously DAZN is they had a relationship with them in some of their international markets. They desperately need programming right now with no MMA, no boxing for the foreseeable future. And MLW was looking for a streaming deal, you know, potentially a new TV deal at the beginning of the year, and then they hired that agency. Who knows whether how much the pandemic affected some of those talks. I guess they were supposedly talking to ESPN at one point, and WWE kind of get involved, and who knows what's going to happen there. But what we have now is they've started on DAZN. Again, we don't know a lot of kind of the financial details, but this is it's another avenue for them to reach. My first thought was, you know, DAZN obviously has a lot of financial trouble, as people know, because they have not been able to air live sports here or around the world. There's been a lot of stories about them selling estates and all this, whatever. I mean, they have it. MLW has a streaming deal, and that's good. There's just a lot of questions. I was kind of curious what your take is when you heard the news.
Yeah, I know they've been talking about this for quite some time, and I think the financial issues on DAZN's side were the main reasons it didn't happen sooner. And so I was surprised just for that reason that, okay, DAZN has money for this. And so I don't know if they're overpaying MLW because they have a real need for content. If MLW is in a position where, hey, we're not running live shows, we could use some money, and they took less than they were asking for before, or if it's just, you know, a straight up good deal for everybody. I hope it is. MLW has a good product, and I give Court Bauer and his team a lot of credit. Yeah, they're not running shows right now, but there was a stretch there where it seemed like once a week we'd be getting, you know, for maybe a few weeks only, but still, hey, new international television deal here, new international television deal there. They're hustling, you know, and I think I've been surprised that the NWA, maybe they have tried, and I'm just unaware, that they haven't tried to move into some of these international television deals because its revenue may not be a ton, but it's some. Mm. And, you know, I mean, they were talking, I know the NWA talked with Turner even before AEW did about doing something on BR Live and their streaming platform. So they've been in that market before, but for Court to land this with DAZN, I mean, you know, it's all in the details of the deal. As you said, we don't know, but it's exciting for them. I would hope that it's going to lead to the weekly Fusion show when things get up and running again, being seen by more people. But I think it's going to come down to, do you have to have a subscription in order to see it? Just, you know, how visible is this going to be? And I know they're still going to be on the, BN Sports.
BN Sports, yeah.
But I don't, you know, does the DAZN deal... And by the way, I hate that name. I just, every time I go to say it, I have to think about it. But yeah, so I don't know if that's going to prevent them from streaming the show on YouTube. So yeah, a lot of questions about this, but potentially an exciting move for them. Mm.
You mentioned NWA. Ring of Honor has been really quiet, and obviously they're not running any shows, but it's kind of interesting that there's been like no talk of empty arena, at least publicly, no real talk of empty arena shows, return date. I mean, they've re-signed Flip Gordon last month, I believe. But other than that, they've been really just quiet. And I don't know if that's good or bad or just that's just the way it is.
I give them credit for calling off those, you know, the anniversary show and the past versus present when they did. I mean, it would have been ideal had they done it sooner and didn't have people traveling to those events. But hey, give them credit for making the right call very early in the pandemic and saying we can't do this and sending people home. From there, I think like the television shows they're doing, some are better than others. They're serving as, you know, personality profiles of the various characters. And I've enjoyed some of them. From a business standpoint, you know, just from talking to different people, a theory is that they're actually saving money right now in some weird way by not running shows, because the shows that they were doing, a lot of them were money losers. And so this isn't really affecting them as a company the same way it does others. And I don't see their books, so I don't know if that's the case. But if so, it makes sense. But more than anything, Josh, I think they needed a break. I think they needed as much as anyone just to – and this just gave them the perfect excuse, horrible circumstances. But I think they needed to go away, reset, and come back strong. I mean, you're moving into a new era with Marty Scurll as a booker. We don't know what Marty Scurll can he book. And I mean, he wasn't given this job. It's something I asked Joe Koff about on The Boom too. And he kind of danced around it. You know, the idea of giving Marty the book, like it's, did you hear something from him that made you think he was a great booker? Is this right? Because you didn't want to lose him to competition? And I think we know the answer. Doesn't mean Marty isn't going to be great. I hope he is. But I think this gives him a chance to kind of sit back and just start to plan, start to lay things out rather than just do all this on the fly. So from ROH's perspective, in a lot of ways, I think this is a strange blessing in disguise.
Well, we'll see how everything plays out throughout the course of the weeks, days, months, years ahead. Going to be interesting, as always, for the pro wrestling business. And you'll be able to read a lot of that, obviously all about it, on prowrestling.net and hear about it. So before I let you go, Jason, we'll give you a chance to go ahead and plug how people can subscribe, what they can check out, things they can listen to, read. The floor is yours.
Sure. It's a great time because it's still spring. And as long as it's still spring, we are having a spring sale. And I know you guys hear about sales all the time on TV from, you know, Kohl's has a sale for everything all the time is one example. This is our first sale since last summer. So it's not like we're moving from a spring sale into the next sale in the summer. It's something that I do on very rarely. And it's 50 cents for 1 month of .net membership. And it just basically gets your foot in the door, lets you sample what we do. Normal rates are $7.50 a month. So this is knocking $7 off. And you know, just cancel by the end if you're not interested. Hopefully you'll see what we do. You'll enjoy it. And you know, we'll hook you. That's the goal here. But there's no shame in walking away. You're supporting a small business. Even with 50 cents, it would be great. So all you do is visit the main page at prowrestling.net. And you should find, ideally, it's going to be at the top of the page. Once in a while, it moves down a couple spots. Just look for the sale, spring sale, 50 cents for 1 month listing. And click in there, and you'll get a coupon code that will take you. You'll get a link and a coupon code that will help you get that savings. Very simple process. And then, for that matter, if you're like, hey, I know what you do. I just haven't been around for a while. But you can take that same $7 off and apply it to any of our other subscription rates. So if you're looking for maybe 3 months, take $7 off, no problem. And then also, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast is my free weekly podcast. I mentioned earlier, Bruce Mitchell was the latest guest and the first ever two-parter. We had a lot to talk about and really, really good feedback on that. I appreciate that from people. And that one is free. So just do a search for Pro Wrestling Boom and on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, hit subscribe. Oftentimes, it's interview subjects from the crazy world of wrestling, Jim Ross or... Oh, Joe Koff, I mentioned. Court Bauer's been on the show. Dave Lagana. The list goes on and on. Stu Bennett. I could keep going all day. But over 100 episodes now, that show comes out weekly. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at Pro Wrestling Net. And you know what, Josh? I didn't even tell people what they get with membership. Shame on me. The ad-free version of ProWrestling.net and a ton of audio content. And I figure if you're listening to Josh and I this deep into audio, you enjoy audio content, and we have a ton of it. All the major television shows and pay-per-views reviewed in audio form, my weekly Q&A, the .NET Weekly Audio Show is our flagship. Jake Barnett and I co-host that together and discuss all the news of the week, and just the list goes on. So just a ton of audio content. What do you have to lose? 50 cents? Come on. Not that big. It's not that big of a deal, Josh. I think people can afford 50 cents. Well, these days, hopefully some people can anyway, right?
Essentially. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 50 cents, everyone can afford that. So that's good stuff. Check them out. Again, thanks so much for stopping by. This has been a great conversation, as I knew it would be. And keep asking the great questions to NXT calls. We'll do our best to keep drowning out the aforementioned international questions about, just talk about the women's division and how great Charlotte Flair is. And when is NXT coming to Scotland, and all these random questions that seem to drown out the really good ones. But we'll do our best, and we appreciate you. Jason Powell, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Josh. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Big thanks to Jason Powell for stopping by. And thanks, you guys. Thanks to you guys all for listening, guys, gals, whoever you are. And yeah, I thought that was kind of the things I wanted to talk about this week with in regards to wrestling. And again, that kind of the political leaning, conservative leaning pro wrestlers, where they find themselves in today's world and in the future. Companies like Ring of Honor, I think that those are kind of all fascinating conversations, because this is a period in time in which, you know, what if ROH wrestlers band together and revolt against Sinclair? Now, that seems unlikely, but there's a lot of unlikely things that have happened over the past weeks and months here, right? So anything is possible. How Jackson Ryker is received in the NXT locker room, I guess, you know, when Dave wrote in one of the recent newsletters, there was some legitimate backstage issues regarding that. And you know, this question of, could this start up where if someone's like, look, we don't want your political views known. And this, we've seen this would happen with ESPN with the, you know, stick to sports thing and some of the edicts that have happened in the last year, ever since Jim Vitaro took over on the network, or 2 years ago, I believe, when he took over and really kind of trying to get the politics out of the conversation. Now it seems to be, you know, nearly impossible to do that. You know, do we see that in pro wrestling organizations, say like a WWE, and how is that received? Now, it doesn't seem to be any censorship so far, but, you know, what if someone like Ryker is told, you can't say certain things? And he said, well, what about on the other side? Why can they say certain things? So this opens up a whole can of worms, and something I'm sure organizations like pro wrestling don't want to have to deal with, but too bad we're here. So we're all going to have to kind of see how this works out together. And I think it's going to be, again, a very interesting story to follow in the next, you know, months and year and who knows how long. But hopefully better times are ahead, cooler heads will prevail for everyone, and we'll be better on the other side of this. But I think we're a little ways away from that. Coming tomorrow, in the day two of 2 days of this very podcast, Mike Bond of MMA Junkie returns, and he hasn't been on the show, I believe, for almost 2 years. So we talk about really just the MMA news of the week. There was a lot that happened between Saturday night and when we recorded on Wednesday. Between, obviously, you know, we got to talk about Connor to the UFC 251 announcement, Fight Island, John Jones, DC Stipe 3, and all types of other stuff. So we had a really good conversation, and look for that on Friday. So big thanks to Jason Powell. Thanks to all you guys for listening. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day, and I greatly appreciate you spending time with me or any of our great podcasters here on WrestlingObserver.com, and definitely check out that 50-cent sale on Jason's site. I mean, look, 50 cents, that's hardly anything. Maybe, you know, if you have some time in your day and you're looking for some new shows to listen to, try that one out as well. So, again, thanks to all you guys for listening. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.